All right, members, welcome from a much-deserved break. I'm going to accord members an opportunity to pose questions or maybe to interrogate the plan as presented. But before that, a special privilege is going to be accorded to A special privilege will be accorded to Honorable Harris to pose his question just because he will be leaving to attend to a doctor's appointment at 11:15. So it shows that this is a committee that is caring. We care for those who must go and see doctors. So can I get other Harris members? I've noted Madam Adams, Madam Magamini, and Honorable Luenge, as well as Honorable Ross. In that, and lastly, Honorable Chabalala, in that sequence. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the privilege. And members, no, I'm not sick. My wife is about to have a baby, so We have a checkup for the next few weeks. I have to be there. I'm pregnant, yes. I might not look it. So I just have four very quick questions. I'll leave it to my colleague, Mr. Ross, to follow up if required. And thank you very much for coming and presenting to the FFC. My first question is about the vacancies. I took a look during the presentation at the Constitution and the legislation, particularly the FFC Act, and I think it struck me that the FFC is the importance of the FSC is underlined by the fact that it's written into the actual constitution. So this is clearly one of the more important oversight meetings we have and one of the more important institutions we deal with. So that really reinforces the point that the fact that we've got these vacancies is a huge problem. Now, from what I can see, certainly the chairperson's position comes down to the presidential appointment. I think this committee needs to get to the bottom of whether this is something that the presidency is actioning, and then where the local government and national government nominees are involved. We need to establish who, or are concerned, we need to establish who is meant to take the next step to making sure these vacancies are filled. So my first question is from the FFC. Am I correct in saying that the chairperson is simply a presidential appointment? And secondly, who can this committee hold to account on those local government and national government nominees? Because we have the power to summon these bodies to come before us and say, we have this vacancy problem at the FSC, we need to solve it, you need to take an action step now. So who are the key individuals concerned? Secondly, with regard to the financials, I can see that there's been a problem over the last few years in terms of a deficit position. And it looks as if it will stabilize from the projections. But it seems to me that the problem came about because in 2006, obviously you had, as you say, this increase in headcount. You had to fill up the staff, and that created an original deficit position. But then that headcount has either been stable or shrinking for the last 5 years. Yet in three of those 5 years, the staff costs have had double-digit increases. So it seems to me that the number of staff have been stable, but you've had these years with these huge staff cost increases. I mean, would you agree that that is the source of at least last year's problem? My third question is that the professional service fees have just gone out of control. It was 300,000 in 2006, and it will be 6.5 million this year. I mean, that's absolutely staggering, that increase. Obviously, you talk about the audit fees increasing. I'm interested, what proportion of professional services fees are audit fees? And what is the rest made up of? Where are these huge increases coming from? And then my last question, Chair, is the problem with the legislation and the need to strengthen accountability. And I think the Acting Commissioner spoke about the Department of Transport not responding on their recommendations on the ARTO. I checked the law, and it says that the FFC Act says that an assignment contemplated in paragraph A, so the proposal to move a mandate from one sphere to another, has no legal force unless the organ of state making such assignment has given consideration to the Commission's recommendations or advice. So my question is, does that requirement in the law be fulfilled by the Department of Transport responding to you? And can they not argue that they've fulfilled it, they've given consideration without responding to the FFC? Because I gather that's the problem. And if the problem is we're breaching the law because the Department of Transport is going ahead with this shift without responding to the FFC, how could the law strengthen that particular aspect? I've been trying to think through options where this committee could sit down with the law and actually strengthen that accountability, but I can understand why it was written in the way that it was. So I'd appreciate some insight from the FFC into actual technical mechanisms to strengthen that accountability. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Harris, and I think you are relieved to attend to the paternity aspect. Madam?
Thank you, Chair. Mine is on slide 40, on the deliverables. The second bullet, there was a brief by Parliament, provincial legislatures, except the Western Cape provincial legislature. Why was this legislature left out? And then on page 29, I don't understand your gender balance. How are you doing it? When you talk about 60% males and 40% females, while there is an understanding in South Africa, a 50-50. So please explain. And why the females' percentage are so low in the SMS? And then on slide 30, do you ascribe the partially achievement to the appointment of a new service provider? Why are you intent appointing a new service provider there on your strategic object number 8? And in Chairperson, the reduction of office space, I don't understand it. Why do the Commission want to reduce office space? For me, that means there wasn't enough planning beforehand. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I will need your indulgence here. Chair, I think we need to go back some few steps backwards, because you sit and listen to the presentation of the Commission, and then as you listen attentively, you start asking yourself so many questions. How much this committee has contributed towards assisting the Commission to function efficiently and effectively? How much us as the Parliament have we given the oversight, the really, really oversight that is assisting, rather than going back and dwell on the issues, the previous issues of 2010-2011. The reason why I'm saying this, Chair, it's because, like what Honourable Harrison has said, you know, the vacancies, they've contributed seriously, seriously problems to the execution of the task by the Commission. As a result, the Commission has shifted from the mandate. The mandate of the Commission by the law, by the Constitution, it is an independent and impartial advisory institution to all three spheres of government. And if you look at the strat plan of the Commission, it doesn't talk to that. Instead, it talks to the Commission itself, to the Commission as a department, I would say so, to the Commission as us, the gender, our finance, and so on and so on. So as a result, then you say to yourself, because even if you look at what has been done thus far, as far as communicating or interacting with local government, you'll see there are submissions. It's more of submissions and reports. But But basically, those submissions and reports were to be used as an instrument to formulate policies. The Commission is supposed to formulate policies that will assist the Commission to be able to give advices to those three spheres of government. And the most surprising one, that's when the Commission starts now forming chair the partnership with the institutions that are supposed to advise. How do you do that, Chair? You are supposed to advise these institutions, but because you are broke, you don't have the money to manage your business, your day-to-day businesses, you find yourself going to bed with the wrong people, the people that you're supposed to advise, the people that you're supposed to say to them, no, hold on, the way you're managing your finances are not right. You find it's because of the budget that they're having, it's because of the shortage of the capacity that they're experiencing, and as a result, they've totally shifted from the mandate. So I think, Chair, we need to do something about it as a committee, because the commission report to us directly, and we are to do the oversight, and we are to do these things correctly. They cannot go to the National Treasury. We cannot expect the Minister of Finance appointing the chair. It's not even within the ambit of the president. It's the parliament according to the constitution. So I am saying maybe we need to engage more. Let's engage more. Let's assist, because really, indeed, they are still very far from reaching. I hear what the goal is. There's only one goal that is talking about your mandate. It's goal number one, the IGFR. Thank you, Chair.
All right, Honorable Luenge.
Thank you, Chair. And Chair, let me first apologize for being late. And we'll also leave earlier for the commitments that one is engaged in. Chair, without maybe lambasting more on how the FSC is looking like these days, I'm sure for the past 2-3 years, we've been receiving a similar report, similar issues being repeatedly reported. There is completely no improvement, and the cutting of numbers is an indication that this institution now is really getting down. It's like a spaza shop which is about to close. So an owner of such a spaza shop has a responsibility to actually ensure that it is a well-known fact by the stakeholders, of which we are. Because really here to say we are moving forward with FSC with no capacity and without following the necessary mandate, then it becomes a problem for the nation, because you have a very critical role to play amongst the spheres of government, in the operations of government. So how would you get this the ability and capability of advising a department when you are actually crawling? You can't have a chairperson who is also a CEO. This is not normal, in that it has been carrying on for a long time. But I think we need to really make our minds and be very clear on the way forward in relation to a recommendation, because this is a clear finding that the institution is not growing, and there is completely no hope that it will grow under the circumstances. And with the help of the warm bodies that are still there, let us come up with a very clear recommendation that will actually cascade to all the institutions that have a mandate to ensure that they are operating. Otherwise, this is disservice to the nation. This is a very critical body which cannot be left lying like this. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Chabalala, and I've noted now. Honorable Mthethwa.
Thank you. I'm waiting for my name to be called. Chairperson, let me thank and welcome the presentation, but to also say I'm sure to the chairperson and the team, it's not an easy task. You know, one can feel your frustration even when you started. In fact, I was also asking myself, are we to receive the report after that? And what will be the end results of what we do? Because you see, part of the responsibility is not only to sit in meeting and listen and go. We need to come up with solutions. But at this stage, you know, Chairperson, I'm grappling with the issues of the mandate and our, therefore, how do we come in as a committee, as much as the provocative is very clear, what is it that we can do or we cannot do around. But nonetheless, I think let me start at the end to say probably the recommendation will be there as the committee, with something that probably we need to look into as a committee, probably without the chair and the team, so that we're able to come out really with recommendations that might be able to escalate and assess, because we would not want to commit ourselves as a committee to say this is what we can do, we cannot do. But I want to find out around issues. For instance, you've got some achievements around your own indicators from your 2011 and 12, and part of them is around you've achieved community participation around state of national trust, budget debates, technical committees, and so forth and so on. I want to find out as and when do you report around it, and how does one access such documentation, if there's any, and that's where I think that we need to also provide oversight. That way we'll be able to gauge and understand exactly around your recommendation, because I think, Chairperson, what we're failing to do is to also gauge as a committee to say, what is it that we do with the recommendation? How can we effectively utilize the recommendations that the committee, or rather that the chair and the committee is responsible to do, because that is their function. And as and when we come in, we should be able to check as an oversight how we can effectively use this instrument and the recommendation that come. And we check the issues of the timing as and when do they arrive, the recommendation, as much as there might be an ongoing practice and something that they need to be doing and reviewing time to time. But what we need to also be asking ourselves is that how effectively do we use the recommendation, therefore that comes into. I think that will be the instrument that will help us. Let me just go to the administration issues. Around your remarks on budget, when you talk about to say that this is what we can do to effectively reduce the issues of your challenges, you speak about, I'm just interested, I'm a member of parliament, I travel on economy class every weekend. So I'm seeing that traveling on economy class, so does it mean you're traveling on business class all along? I don't want to comment if that's the case. But what's more important is on the bulletin, on the freeze on new recruitments. So I would want to find out if you're saying that you're going to freeze on new recruitments while we've noted the serious challenges around the staffing and the capacity, can you afford such exercise in an honest fact? As much as you might face challenges, but can you really afford the exercise? But aligning to the office space and that discussion. But let me come to the your corporate services around the annual performance on the budget. You speak about maximizing, I think it's the issues of the gender. But I want to find out, because you champion policy. You speak about policy, what we have to do around policy of the gender mainstreaming, so that when you do your own oversight around from municipality and coming with it, the reality fact and the known fact is that as government we are failing to deal with the issues of disability where we are sitting. Municipalities are sitting at 0%, 1%, 2%, it's at maximum, the one that I know. So I'm saying that escalating to government as well, or rather national parliament, and it's something that I'm also not seeing. It will be also be effective that if we can see it by you, so that even if when you do that, you're able to also account for it in here. But it's something that I feel the documentation as well should also be able to pick up as part of your oversight in the municipalities and coming upwards. But overall, Chairperson, let's thank the energy that they still have, even if it's too little. Let's keep pushing until we get it right. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm going to accord Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chairperson.
And you follow.
Thank you, Chair. There was a lot of good questions from my colleagues. Let me just perhaps holistically ask then one question, perhaps with an addition. Yes, I agree with my colleagues that I think the ultimate purpose that we would like to achieve is to have a government in excellence, and I think the FFC has a very vital role to play in this. In terms of your research abilities, what you can contribute, and in terms of your recommendations, your submissions, I think it's just critical that we get the impression that the FSC is really making inroads into this, and that we have these reports and research that could translate into action. And perhaps just in establishing, perhaps progress in this regard, what we can use to see that, yes, indeed, there was a tangible result in terms of all your recommendations. May I then just allude to the following? Perhaps electricity prices. I think when the finance minister spoke on administered prices, he said there was indeed a huge study being done by the FFC on administered prices. And perhaps I'd just like to have your views on that and your study and completion regarding that. I knew that we had the prices reduced from 25.9% to 16%. I don't know whether your report also had something to do with that. I know that we had a huge fight in terms of the energy pricing policy regarding this. But then also in terms of another elephant in the room, which is the equitable grant to local government. And I was quite concerned when I heard that in terms of your composition that you don't have a representative currently from COPCA as a commissioner. And I think that would have helped a lot. Because I think it's huge amounts of equitable grants to local government, which is necessary, and I know local government needs to be sustainable and that they are very dependent on these equitable grants. But I would like to know whether there's been a research done into this in terms of their accountability to governments regarding the equitable grant. I've spoken to your chair regarding electricity distribution networks. I'm very glad to hear that there is progress in terms of a task team being set up. In terms of how can this be funded, because we have a constitutional problem there in terms of who is accountable for the funding in maintenance repairs of the distribution networks. We know it should be local government, but there is a constraint regarding their financial abilities. And then, Chairperson, perhaps on infrastructure, and I find this under your point that you've made in stakeholder engagement, sharing of information, and sustainable development. And there was mentioned infrastructure, but I would like to know, is there a study being done on the funding of the infrastructure, which is such a critical aspect for South Africa, perhaps on that. And I think FFC can make a huge, huge contribution in terms of presenting a paper on financial models, how we can fund the infrastructure challenges of our country. That would be then the holistic question. Just a remark then in terms of briefing of provincial legislatures. Did you also brief the Western Cape? Was the Western Cape also briefed? And thank you. That would conclude my contribution. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. That was the same question I think that was posed by Honourable Adams. That's a follow-up. Okay. That's Mcheto.
Thank you, Chair. Most of my questions have been already asked by my previous colleagues. But I just want to ask one question. If you were to summarize this strategy document and direct it to us, how would you summarize it? And what would be your point of this committee to assist you? And secondly, the issue of this deficit. I'm glad that you are saying you've got a plan. Almost 2 years down the line, this matter will be resolved with or without any extra funding that you are going to get. But what was lacking is just to tell us that plan that you are using currently, which is dealing with the with such a deficit. Yeah, let me stop there.
All right, thank you, Mema. Maybe let me just put my questions before you respond. I was just trying to check on your presentation compare it to your main document, like more especially your performance plan. In your table of contents, you have cited that there is information on consolidated budget for 2012-2013 financial year. That's number 8. As number 9, there is divisions. And I didn't find any information in your main document. I'm not sure if this a deliberate omission or there's something that you want to bring to our attention as a committee. Because at least there is some information coming out of the presentation that we have done. And secondly, on page 22 of the same document, that's your annual performance plan, the formatting of your columns there. Not unless maybe there is an explanation, because you see, on that page you are saying on a given financial year, that is in this case is 2012-2013, you will be having target for all the quarters. And obviously your division of this, because I can see your target here is to obtain, to make one annual, that's an example, because there are many descriptions here. One annual submission for division of revenue. And that simply says each quarter you will do part that will ultimately lead to that target, which is one annual submission. But when you come to target for quarter four, you cite the one, and when I try to bring this together, you might be having an appropriate explanation. When I try to bring this together, I mean the 3.25 that you have cited here, I don't know, is there an assumption that even in that last quarter, you will stick to that particular target? And if the assumption is correct, is there a way in which we can maybe increase your column so as it becomes a bit clearer? Not that it's maybe it's your standard of reporting, but it really caused some concerns from my side, and I would appreciate if that is cleared. And my further question is on your determination of reference books that must be acquired. I'm not sure what informs that determination, because you are referring to four reference books, and apparently it's just a standard, and in the obviously the financial years have been cited. So I'm not sure what informs this number, or maybe it's this reference book that are so special. I'm not sure what are you referring to. I'm not even sure of the reference books that you are referring to, but definitely I know these are reference books that are relevant to your work. So I'm not sure what informs the number. Why specifically four? And lastly, you cited confidently in the plan that you will be obtaining an AG opinion without matters of emphasis. Does this imply that you will have dealt with the issues that caused you to get a different opinion? Let's get to know if this is an indication. Thank you very much. And I will accord you an opportunity then to respond to all the raised questions. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members, and thank you, Chairperson. I'm actually a bit taken aback that honorable Luyenge has actually not yet to listen to my response to the issue that he raised. But it's fine. I'm sure you will be able to pick up that response, because he asked a very genuine question. And used an analogy that I don't know whether it's an analogy that's that describes the commission as it currently stands, because I think I must actually say here that the analogy of a commission representing a spaza shop is probably a little bit exaggerating the nature of the problem that the commission faces. It's not a dysfunctional commission. I don't think that we have reached a point that we can actually say that the commission is actually dysfunctional. I really think that we tried to provide relevant responses in the last round when we presented our annual report. Similar sentiments were expressed in this committee, and we subsequently had engagements with the chairperson of the committee, and we tried to explain some of the issues that whereas we have issues that were raised by the Auditor General. Those issues were basically not issues in the final analysis of the event, and I think I tried to explain that at the outset. So I would basically expect that any questions or any issues that are raised basically move us beyond an assessment of what is happening at the Commission on the basis of those particular issues. We have highlighted issues, and we have also explained how we have dealt with some of the issues that have been raised. It's not that we have not been doing anything. I must say that I welcome the interventions from the perspective of what it is that Parliament actually needs to do to assist the Commission to move forward from where it currently is in terms of capacitating the Commission, because the issues that we are raising, directing them to the Commission, is actually not supposed to be directed to us here. As a Commission, we have a responsibility to perform the mandate assigned to the Commission. We don't have any responsibility to appoint the commissioners whose terms expire. We have a responsibility to appoint staff at the Commission. And the staff that we have appointed, we think on the basis of the resources that we have raised the issues about our constraints in terms of the resources available to the Commission. And the expectation is that Parliament would assist us in actually moving forward in that direction to be able to address the problems. I think one of the issues that the Secretary highlighted when he was going through his presentation is that we've got ICT equipment that dates back to 2006-2007 that we actually operate with. Now, what kind of people do you attract into an organization that utilizes such outdated equipment? It's not only doctors that require up-to-date equipment in a hospital. Good researchers require the same. And so the Commission depends on good researchers to advise the people that are appointed to the Commission are not researchers. They actually don't conduct any research. They assess what is produced at the Commission because they are appointed for their expertise, but they don't actually do the actual work. They do the actual work in terms of ensuring that they give guidance and direction in terms of the issues that must be addressed. And that is an important point that I think we need to think about. It's the Secretariat of the Commission that has a problem. Now, if the Commission itself has a problem of capacity in terms of the number of commissioners that are there, that problem basically gets compounded. And we can't actually look at it and say, what are these commissioners doing? It's a buzz show. I don't think that that's how we can deal with it, but that's fine. Let me come to the issues that were raised by Honorable. What I'll do is, like, I'll speak to some of the key issues, and then I'll ask my colleagues in the Commission to also speak. And then there were questions that were raised directly relating to the documentation that was submitted. I will ask the Secretary and the CFO to basically respond to those. Let me start with the Honorable Harris' question. The first one relates to who is responsible for what in the appointment of the Commission, and who should, if this committee were to approach those people, who are the people that must be approached. The Commission, all the commissioners are appointed by the President. The nomination process is such that organized local government through SALGA must nominate individuals that will then be submitted to the President for final selection. I think they must nominate two individuals that will finally be appointed, but they sent more names than two. That's what happened. So SALGA is an institution that if, as Parliament, you would like to engage on this process, you would have to engage SALGA. We have, as a commission, engaged with them through our own processes. With respect to the provincial nominees, it's the 9 provincial premiers that actually nominate the provincial nominees and submit to the president. At a national level, it's the Minister of Finance that basically nominates the national nominees that submits those names to the president. So we have at all levels engaged with the relevant structure that must do those nominations through the Budget Council and the Budget Forum. And so our own inputs into that were already submitted. We can submit it to this committee should you be interested in receiving what we have sent to those. We have, over and above that, also raised the matter with the Director General in the Presidency, and he had promised that he was going to look at that, but it's been a while. Obviously, some of these things take time. Now, in terms of the chairperson and the deputy chairperson, those are two positions that are full-time in terms of the Constitution and the FFC Act. Those are appointed by the president. Basically, it's the president's prerogative to decide who the chairperson and deputy chairperson is going to be. So that is an issue that you can raise with the presidency. I think Honorable Harris also raised the issue of the staff and the resource constraints, and then he raises the issue that in terms of his own assessment, the personnel budget has been increasing, even though the staff has been reduced. Is he right to make that assessment? I think the CFO will actually speak to that kind of a question, but at a very general level, I would assume that the staff complement that actually led to the increases in the headcount, that actually led to where we are at, was also accompanied by a review of the salary packages to make the salaries competitive at the commission. Because at that time, when a lot of people were hired, the commission was losing quite a number of its resources. The turnover was basically about every 2 or 3 years, you would lose probably 4 or 5 researchers that you would actually just lose. They are gone. And all of them are not lost to the system, so we are happy that all of them, they left and they joined other government departments because they could actually receive better remuneration. And obviously, considering the size of the commission, people would feel that your prospects of rising are basically limited. So you would expect anyway that there would be that kind of a movement. So, but if you really need to create an institution that is sustainable, then you need a cream of people that will actually carry some of the work forward, even that are no longer are going to be moving because of financial whatever differences between government, what they can earn in government. And so we aligned our salaries to what government pays, the DPSA salaries, and that actually obviously changed the structure of the wage bill in that respect. The issue of the audit fees versus other professional fees, I think the CFO will speak to that. Consultation with the FFC in terms of the FFC Act by departments. I think what I'm trying to raise here is that there seems to us as a commission that there is a lack of understanding by some government departments of the FFC Act and what actually needs to happen when they take, whether it's an executive decision or it's an actual, which results in a shifting of a function from one sphere or from one organ of state in one sphere into an organ of state in another sphere. A process that must actually be followed. So what we are saying is that as and when we pick up those kinds of issues, we should be able to, you know, within reasonable time, be able to get the information that we request and require, and then be able to respond to the stakeholder that has raised that particular issue in terms of that particular piece of legislation. It becomes difficult when you are dealing with the people that actually don't actually understand what the mandate of the commission is and how the commission does its business. So what we are trying to do there is to try and see if we can have certain protocols. And I think in terms of the amendment, I think Mr. Mzaitume, who is the lawyer here, can correct me. In terms of the amendment, there is a certain clause that is going to be put in the commission that actually allows us to gazette some protocols that need to be followed, just like any of the other Chapter 9 institutions are empowered to do. That would probably address that kind of a problem. Because we did it, we sent some documents that we submitted with our recommendations, but we don't see anything that has changed. I think as far back as 2006, we submitted a template, but we don't see that actually happening. So let me move on to the questions by Honorable Adams. Why was the Western Cape left out of the briefings? The Western Cape was actually not left out by the Commission. We actually requested from them a date by which to come and actually present our recommendations to them and have a discussion with them on those recommendations. And they simply did not give us any date. We tried to write to them. I was even on the verge of writing to the Premier, but I decided not to because I thought there was a process that Parliament basically has around these kinds of engagements with provincial legislatures. We did indicate to the chairperson of the Select Committee on Finance, because we know that at some point the chairperson of the NCOP had actually written to the provincial speakers around the importance of incorporating the FFC in their process. But so we did not get anything from the Western Cape in spite of the reminders that we sent and until we actually finalized the whole budget process. So it wasn't at all a fault of the Commission that they were left out. It's basically their own processes. The issue of the gender, why are we going for 60-40 when in fact it's supposed to be 50-50? I think when you do a plan, an annual plan, you probably want to look at where you are and be realistic about what you put in there to say you will do. Because at the moment, the numbers are they're pathetic, if I were to put it like, especially if you go to SMS. I think our commissioner here, who is a lady, will attest to me that at the commission level, we've got, at the moment, it's 50-50. Is it 50-50? It's 50-50. But at the secretariat level, which is where the experts sit, we actually are struggling to get those numbers to work. So the 60-40 basically is just for the year, but the idea, the overall thrust in terms of the strategy is to actually go for 50-50 or reverse that 40 becomes the male and the 60 becomes the female. That's the interest that we have. So I'm sorry that may be sending, but it was about how realistic can you get from where we are to get to 60-40 would be a significant achievement in as far as the secretariat is concerned. But I think at the commission level, we are very much fine. the reduction in the office space. The reduction in the office space, basically, as indicated by the secretary of the commission, took a decision in terms of how it wants to operate its business against the background of the massive resource shortage constraints that we have. We took a decision that the staff that we currently have, we will try and maintain that in terms of our operating model. We will then try and rope in other research institutions that have got experts in different areas that we would need to feed into our research process. So we would utilize, for example, universities, research institutions like, for example, the Human Sciences Research Council. It's actually working out quite well, the partnership, because they can draw in like funders like your United Nations, Children's, whatever, UN, UNESCO, you can name all of those multilateral institutions. They can draw in resources, so we can, if we partner with them, we can be able to access some of the experts research or policy-based or evidence-based research into the Commission through those types of partnerships. So we try to keep a lean, for lack of a better word, it's called a lean and mean machine. That's what we are trying to do. Now, given the fact that the model, the original model that the Commission had, which was of expanding the headcount, could not actually be sustained in terms of the budget, which is what resulted in that deficit in the first place. Once we decided that we are not going to grow the staff complement of the Commission, we would instead utilize a different operating model. We then found ourselves with space that we are actually not utilizing. So this space that is that we are actually getting rid of is a legacy of decisions that were taken in the past. So you can say from your side that it's a plan gone wrong, probably, not necessarily lack of planning. I think it's a plan that actually went wrong, or which was wrongly implemented, because I think at the point that that plan was adopted, there was every confidence that if we produce a plan like this, it will be funded. And unfortunately, it was never funded in 2006, 2007. And it was then carried, the legacy of that has been carried into the future. Now we need to get rid of it. And that's how we are actually dealing with the, with the, that's why we are offloading space. So the 42% is in the mid-range office. The 50% is in our Cape Town office. Part of the legacy of our Cape Town office is that originally, that floor had the FFC and also some offices for ANC's researchers that were there. When they moved, there was this open space there, and the commission thought as we grow, we might actually require this space. As we interact more with parliament, we might require this space for, sometimes we do run some workshops, but they're not that's frequent. We do run some workshops and invites, or when we sometimes meet with the treasury people, we can also meet there. But it's, the space is rarely utilized. So what we're thinking is, why must we keep that space if it is not used as it's not really cost effective? Now, in times of this tightening of belts and all of that, we thought that we need to reduce that space. So again, these are legacy issues that we are trying to address in order to move forward and try and turn around that issue of the deficit. That is the issue there around that. You also asked a question about I didn't actually quite understand what it was, but it has to do with Honourable Adams, with our appointment of a new service provider. I don't know whether you're talking about our service provider in ICT, and if it's that one, the reason why we appointed a new service provider for ICT was that the one that we had is the one that did not have a tax clearance certificate or could not produce a tax clearance certificate, and as a result, we had in terms of the supply chain management regulations, we incurred that irregular expenditure because we had on our as our service provider somebody who did not have a tax clearance certificate. That is why we replaced them. Now, if it's about the network, we've been experiencing problems with a service provider called DataPro. That's been doing our connectivity, and we have been advised by our new service provider that internet solutions basically provide a far much better service than DataPro, and we also, in terms of cost, we also realize that the internet solution provide a more competitive cost, it's basically an economic decision that we've taken in that regard. Now, to come to Honorable Madlamini's questions, I think yours were really about what it is that the committee, that Parliament must do. And I must say I agree with you that, it's a very difficult thing, a very difficult situation that we do find ourselves in if we have to do certain things. And the issue that you raise about the threat, I would call it a threat to the mandate of the Commission, because it's really about how we manage those relationships with those institutions that we are supposed to be advising. Now, if we have not been very careful in managing those relationships, the mandate is actually at stake. And as you rightfully say, how do you expect to be advising somebody and then have to go and ask for money from them? That's the question that was the key question in that Kada Asmal report. About the FFC, that your budget is sitting with the National Treasury. But how do you then exercise your mandate on the National Treasury if you must actually go and request that your money from them? So obviously that is a question that as the FFC, we can't do much about. What we can do is to say, how best do we engage in this kind of a situation, because it's the law, it's in the law that should be the case, that our budget comes from the Minister of Finance, it's in the FFC Act. So part of the discussions around the amendments of that Act will raise those issues, because frankly speaking, the FFC Act, when it was passed, and I'll go back to the issue that was raised about how can a chairperson be a CEO, that the Honorable Luyenge asked, it's not the fault of the Commission that it is like that. It is in the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act that the chairperson of the Commission is the accounting officer and is also the chief executive officer of the Commission. And it's a problem that as a Commission we have raised. It's not that we think it's a very good thing. We have raised quite sharply. We have even requested from the Minister to use Section 36 of the Public Finance Management Act, where he is entitled to actually instruct that the position of somebody else other than the chairperson acts as the CEO of the Commission. And we're still waiting for that instruction. In fact, I was supposed to have a meeting with the Accountant General 2 weeks ago on that particular matter. I had a first meeting with him in December. 2 weeks ago, I was supposed to have another meeting with him, but obviously because of some of the issues that the National Treasury is dealing with in Limpopo, he could not actually make the appointment, so it has had to be rescheduled. But we are definitely very much or equally concerned about that issue as yourselves, as a committee, and we'll be very happy if you would assist us in resolving those kinds of issues rather than us coming to defend why it's like that. So I'll be very happy for that kind of an intervention as a commission, basically. So the issue of the mandates of the commission and how it is articulated in the strategic plan, I think you were basically basing it on this issue of alliances or kind of partnerships with these departments or these organs of state like municipalities, and you must actually advise them. But then it's really about in our approach, it's really about an issue of how you manage that those Chapter 3 provisions in the Constitution of Cooperative Governance without actually compromising the independence of the Commission. So in any joint work that we do, even with the National Treasury, there is an upfront statement that basically says that whatever happens, and this, most of this work is at a technical level, when the Commission takes its final decisions, it takes its final decisions independent of what has happened at the technical level. So in that respect, I would agree with you that there is a potential that you might actually compromise your independence. So there has to be a process of how you actually manage that that engagement, such so that you actually protect the independence of the commission. We found ourselves in a situation where we would like to do these things. We would like for municipalities and local government and provincial governments to cooperate with us in addressing some of the problems. We found ourselves in a position where the resources that we have are not actually sufficient for us to be able to do that. So sometimes you would, for example, let me give you an example of what Limpopo provided. Limpopo provided facilities for hosting the public hearings. Eguruleni provided a venue to using one of their own facilities to hold those public hearings, and they also provided some catering, I think they did. Those are the kinds of contributions. So it's like you're getting some contributions from them. Whether those contributions mean that now you must work in such a way that you must their interests must come first is what we have to manage as a commission. So we were quite grateful that they actually came up to assist in that process, and we treated them pretty much like every other stakeholder that was there. So it's really we do appreciate the fact that the committee raises that as a concern, and we really have to be on our toes in terms of how we manage that, and I think as we move forward with it. Did you want to add?
Just to come in on the question of whether there's been a shift in our understanding of our mandates, which I think Bongani's addressed many of those questions. I think we're constantly interrogating as a commission how we more effectively pursue our mandate. And that I don't think that there has been a shift in our understanding of ourselves as an independent, impartial advisory body. But what we have looked at is how effective we are being in pursuit of our mandate and how we can become more effective over time. So, there are a number of the issues that I think we're discussing here are really around that the pursuit of the mandate rather than any change in the mandate itself. Specifically, we've looked at a new delivery model for the commission, because for a number of reasons, trying to build up a university-like structure where we have the leading kind of academic researchers in all aspects of intergovernmental fiscal relations just simply wasn't viable. So we've looked at a model that looks at how do we leverage in capacity in South Africa, even globally if need be, knowledge resources right across the whole country from other from universities, from other public entities like the HSRC and so forth, so that we see ourselves as operating in a network, a knowledge network. And not trying to just simply replicate highly specialized knowledge and compete for a limited pool of resources only. So that's been an important shift in our delivery model, which I think is going to over time deliver better and better results in pursuit of our mandate. But as Bongani has mentioned, one has to guard against the compromising our integrity, and I think the fire walls that we have in the process between the Secretariat and the Commission are intended to do that. I think the other shift in our delivery model has been around an impact orientation. We take the advisory role seriously, so it's not simply enough to do research. It can be research at the cutting edge, but if the right stakeholders are not engaging with that research, if we're not in an ongoing dialogue with them, that research isn't going to have the kind of value that the country needs and that the Constitution demands in this case. And so we have to look at how, and I think here, again, networks are important, because if we're not part of networks of discussion, how do we get our voice heard as well? How can we adequately play that advisory role? So we put a lot of emphasis in understanding, in trying to better understand how we can have an impact in policy, the various policy arenas where we're operating. And you're seeing things in the strategic plan coming through around the much better use of social media, the refurbishment of the website, a real emphasis in the number of in being responsive to parliamentary committees, but also other stakeholders, and getting out there. So a punishing travel schedule, in fact, for some of the researchers and commissioners who tasked with those activities. But then also new research methodologies, where we're saying, listen, particularly on the two areas we're looking at now around the local government fiscal framework and around housing finance, we're saying, listen, it's not going into a dark room and reading all the textbooks or looking at all the numbers that are going to really reveal the underlying problems that we face in financing local governments or in the housing finance arena. We need to be talking very actively with stakeholders, and so we've got a very action research oriented model of knowledge generation there, which is a new thing for the Commission. So working with through these quite large and very vocal public hearing processes of learning what people are saying are the challenges. So we've had local authorities coming with real passion and saying, this is where we stand. Look at our financial position. This is what it feels like to be sitting here and be being strangled. And we've had to engage with that, which I think has been a very, very useful process. So a focus on better impact and new ways of working, I think, is key to our delivery model. And then I think the third part of the new delivery model is around living with the constraints. We've been saying, many of the issues around vacancies, around funding, around the conflation of the CEO and chair roles, we brought this to the table many, many years ago. In fact, some of them predated my appointment. We can go on talking about them, but in reality, we also need to move ahead. And I think one of the key shifts we made is we can't change. There are things we can't change. We can keep advising, and we still need to move ahead. So in the environment of not being able to change, we've had to take some very hard decisions say, for example, around funding, and say, well, while it may be nice to have more office space or a slightly nicer office working environment, we want to invest much more in our people. We want to invest more in our ability to operate within networks and get the best possible knowledge for as an input into our recommendations and so forth. So we've moved ahead in making some quite tough decisions on the expenditure side as well. And I think those are all part, if we were to give a brief summary of the key shifts that you're seeing in the strategic plan. It's around that, the implementation of that delivery model across those facets.
Thanks, David. I think I can't say any much more on that particular matter. With regards to Honorable Tshabalala, there is probably one issue around the budget. You raised some issues around the budget, and I think the CFO will speak to those. But the other issue that you raised is the freezing of new recruitments. It's one of those hard decisions that we have taken. I mean, if you can't actually, you see, now we could easily get over excited because we asked for something. I can't remember, I'm sure the CFO will tell you how much we had requested, but we got seven odd million. We could easily get excited and say, because my research director is sitting there, he can actually kill me for that, but that's fine, I can live with it. If he is struggling for numbers, so we could easily say, no, it looks like something is coming, so maybe let's take our chances and expand the staff complement. But the reality is that that might not actually happen in the next 5 years. We might actually be sitting where we are now for the next 5 years and just getting an inflationary adjustment. So if you take the wrong decision, you might end up back to square one where we're coming from. So what we've decided to do is to pretend we did not get any injection into our budget from where we were, in order that we will be able to address that accumulated budget, the deficit. Now, you know what that means? That we owe the Financial and Fiscal Commission money as a commission. So any extra money that we get must actually be paid to actually cover that, to address that money that we owe to the Financial and Fiscal Commission. And obviously, an institution which is like us, where we are, which is supposed to be about good financial management and all of that, those are issues that if we say to somebody else, you must actually tighten your belt, and we don't tighten our belt, and we're not seen to be tightening our own belt, then it can't be right. So the point about it's one of those bitter pills that we must swallow in order to deal with the legacy problems that we as this set of commissioners inherited, basically. We have to deal with that because there are no extra resources coming. We will have to deal with that. So we took a conscious decision that we are not going to hire more people. We can replace core people that move on, those we can actually replace. But in non-core areas, when people move out, we reorganize the tasks, and so we can try and deal with the problems that we have until such a time that we are comfortable that we have now reached a comfortable level. We will continue in that direction until we get to that point. So that is the real issue. So at this point in time, it's far much more important for us as a commission to address our ICT problems, because if computers keep on crashing and everything keeps on crashing, the good people that we have will leave us as well, because they can't work with those frustrations. And so those are our key focus area going forward. If we get any extra resources, is to actually address the ICT issue. We're doing a piecemeal approach at the moment because of the resource constraint. With respect to Honorable Ross, issues. I think if I recall very well, when we discussed the issue of administrative prices and when we presented our fiscal framework submission to this committee in February, you did raise this particular issue, And you had indicated that you would be you would like us to come and brief the committee. And I think in our response, because we did send a written response as well, we did indicate that we would be very happy to come and brief this committee on this particular matter. So I think I would still leave that as that that open invitation rather than engage it now. The issue of the equitable grant to local government, I take it you mean the equitable share for local government. There's currently two processes that are in place in terms of activities. At the Commission, we've got this review of the local government fiscal framework. It is linked to the public hearings that we've spoken about this morning. And there's also another a process that is being run by the National Treasury, Department of Cooperative Governance, and SALGA, that also involves the Financial and Fiscal Commission Secretariat team of reviewing the formula, the local government equitable share formula. So there's a broader fiscal framework issue which will probably be more appropriate rather than just the review of the formula. The review of the formula does not change anything about the resources for local government available in the revenue sharing process. It's just a technical thing. But the fiscal framework, the broader fiscal framework issues are the ones that are more important. From the government side, there is an intent to hold a summit, which is called the Local Government Fiscal Framework Summit, if I'm not mistaken. Tanya can correct me. But that summit, there was a pre-summit that was held late last year. I think it must have been in October, September. And we, myself and Commissioner Ajam here, were requested to actually come in and be part of that process. Just the planning of the summit, but we come in again as independents, not as part and parcel of that team, but just as independent people who observe and advise. The issue of the electricity distribution, the process that, including the infrastructure, Honourable Ross, the process that we have actually started is following the briefings that we had with the Energy Committee and some of the discussions that we had initiated as a commission last year with the department. We have met, I think it's 2 weeks ago, myself and the executive managers at the commission met with the Director General and her executive team at the department, and we agreed to set up a technical task team that will look at specifically the work that has been done specifically by the Commission around electricity and energy in general, and what the department's work is around, and then we can then start a process of discussions on how some of the recommendations of the Commission can be infused into the work that the department is doing. So we have a process with the department in terms of implementation and discussion of some of the recommendations that have been made by the commission. I'm sure once that process is completed, again the commission takes an independent view. We will be able to supply any further information in that regard to the committee. Honourable Mtetwa, I don't know the question. You said you need a summary of what, in terms of the strategic document, what I would like the committee to assist the commission around. Let me ask Tanya to respond to that question.
I think, if I was not correct, that the question was, if we had to summarize the strategic plan, what would we say? I think we would say that the FFC is not a spaza shop about to close. We face difficulties, but as my colleague has mentioned, we have tried to manage those difficulties where those difficulties have originated outside our control.
So we have been dealing with our deficit issues. One of the questions that you asked, I think Bongani is trying to explain that. And we believe that even despite those issues, we will continue to be one of the most foremost research organizations in this country. We will maintain our standards of excellence, and we will continue to meet shareholder expectations, which are growing. We believe that the FFC's role in independent specialist advice is going to be critical in the medium term for a number of reasons. As Bongani mentioned earlier, because of the IGFR summit and policy uncertainty around the general structure of how the intergovernmental system is going to be in the future and what the associated fiscal arrangements will be, because of the continuing weakness of the global economy, the Eurozone crisis, and what this means for the tight fiscal framework in South Africa, and because of financial management weaknesses at provincial level and sustainability at local level. So in a nutshell, I think that those are the strategic areas of thrust of the strategic plan.
Okay. Then let me move on to the chairperson's issues. Most of the chairperson's issues were around the contents of the documentation. And so I would ask the secretary and the CFO to actually address those, because those are quite technical stories in the submission. But I think you asked something about the issues around the confidence about the Auditor General. I think that my confidence basically stems from the fact that the issues that were raised by the Auditor General turned out to be not the truth of what was happening at the Commission last year. So the engagement that the committee had with the Commission was on the basis of the matters that were raised that I consider to have been real issues, were those three or four issues. It was the irregular expenditure, which was the matter of and that is where the lack of oversight came from, the matter of a tax clearance certificate, and then there was the matter of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, that's payments to the South African Revenue Service, which was not the Commission's fault, which was later acknowledged by SARS and corrected, and the money that had been paid, SARS basically reimbursed the Commission. And then there was the matter of the deficit, the going concern issue, which is the deficit, which we have indicated has got its own legacy issues that we as the current Commission are dealing with. So not to say that we are. So I'm very confident, Chairperson, that even on the matter of the going concern, even if we had not received an additional amount going forward, the measures that we had put in place were in such a way that within the next 3 years, that deficit would have been reduced already. If the CFO can actually give you the numbers, our preliminary projections in terms of the outcome for the year is that we have actually managed to save some money coming out of last year. So in most cases I would have called it underspending, but because we have a deficit, what that has done is that it's going to pay for that deficit. So we have actually started even without any adjustment to our budget reducing. So that gives me confidence that going concern issue was indeed going to be wiped out, even if we hadn't received any injection. Now, some of the other issues that were raised were really housekeeping issues, Honorable Chairperson, because there was a list of things about performance information and all of that, which the Auditor General is not actually giving an opinion on. It's just saying, if I were to give an opinion, this is what I would say. Now, these are housekeeping issues that everybody in government or across government must actually address. And as I indicated, we have been addressing them quite rigorously, also together with the Auditor General also assisting us in actually showing us how they would like that information to be presented for their audit purposes. So I think we have shared that kind of an information with them, and we have been able to, I'm certain that we would have been able to improve on that performance information that had raised issues. Let me at this point, Chairperson, there was a question about who audits us. It's the Auditor General that actually audits the Commission. Let me ask the CFO first to tackle those questions that relate to the budget, and then I'll ask the Research Director and the Secretary to talk to the performance information, because you also raised the issue around the references. Why particularly four references? And I think it was yourself that raised that question. Yeah. So I will leave to the executive managers to respond to. So if you allow me, Mavuso.
Thanks, Chair. And I must say that the kind of engagement that we have with honourable members today, it was quite very beneficial to us. And we know very well where we're coming from with this committee in terms of helping us to achieve our objectives, especially on the financial side of things. And I must also emphasize the point that was said by our chair in terms of whether we capable, the question that was asked by the Honourable Chair, that to have confidence about our Auditor General's issues. I think as a Commission at some point in time, I think about 2006 and 2007, we are the only constitutional institution that have a clean audit report. And under those circumstances where we're having even huge deficit, and if you look at our financial report, basically it's not around the financial management of issues and so on. And it's about those issues that are upcoming now as we grow up as in the professional of accounting, not only looking at the financial management and also at other non-financial matters. I think when we look at exactly what came out of those issues, also I must say that the analysis that was done by the Honorable Harrison is not in terms of the audit fees and as part of the professional fees, how we're able to deal with that. I must say that last year we had rigorous discussions with honourable members in terms of, we even came and tabled our 10-year analysis of these audit fees. And I must say that really helps us, because the worry was the jump that we had from 700,000 to 1.4 million on audit fees. And the explanation that we're given by the Auditor General was of the obligatory nature in terms of the audits that they normally do, because there was no performance information before, there was no supply chain management issues, all those issues in terms of the standard of auditing. They have to follow certain procedures, whether we're a small institution or a bigger institution. Therefore, I think with the intervention, part of the additional funding, even if it's not enough, it's to address that issue of the audit fees, which it's earmarked as part of that. And I must say that the mandate of the Commission in terms of dealing with those, it's also being limited by the obligatory nature of these demands that we normally have in terms of audit fees and other institutional matters that they normally come in. And we know very well with the points that have been highlighted earlier on by our Commission in terms of separating the function of the Chair and the CEO, there will be some budgetary issues that comes with that function. And these are some of the things that we have to highlight in our plans. And also, one of the things that we did now was to look at what Commissioner David has said in terms of the current delivery model. What can we do to ensure that with the limited budget that we have, we are also able to meet the financial obligations in terms of the statutory, that we should not over budget. And one of the things that we did was to look at the overall, look at each and every line cost in terms of like the question that was asked by Honorable Chabal in terms of the traveling on the economy class. I think one of the things that we're doing, the secretariat, all the staff members of the commission, no one is using the business class. It's pure the economic class. But one of the things that some of the commissioners that used to engage on the commission's business were traveling on business class, but we asked them in terms of, we understand that that's the only benefit that they have at the commission because of the kind of remuneration that they have doesn't even allow them to get that. But one of the things that we have also asked them, in certain cases, where it allows for the commission is to use the economic class as part of the cost-saving measures. And also, you'll see even the number of researchers that they normally come to Parliament. We have reduced the number of researchers that they normally come there. Maybe we'll take one or two researchers to accompany whoever that will be presenting as part of the technical background. Those are some of the internal issues that we're trying to deal in terms of reducing the cost and also making sure that what we put there as part of the strategic plan, when you go back and look at the performance of the commission, when they audited, they found that what we have set out as part of the objectives, that has been achieved. And I must say that in terms of the commission's, one of its mandates is to ensure that we do the recommendation to Parliament, and we have never failed on that mandate under these difficult financial circumstances that we're facing. I think there was another question that was asked by the chair in terms of deliberate omission of the consolidation budget. That was not a deliberate omission, Honorable Chair. I think that was addressed yesterday. We did send the information. When the Commission Secretary was sending the document, I think he left out those details of the budget, but we did make a follow-up with one of your researchers. We sent that information to you. But as part of my summary report, as you're correctly saying, we've tried to put the details of those finances. I think I must have answered all the questions.
Just to pick up on a few remaining questions, the reference books. Reference books are textbooks, basically, on economics, on the law, or things that we need on an annual basis. Now, some of them, you get new editions, okay, that you need to buy, okay, and there's provision for that. Some of them are loose leaf, meaning that each time there's an update, okay, you take out certain pages and you put in new ones. So when we talk about reference books here in four, okay, that is usually the number of books that we're able to afford or to update on an annual basis. Now, because our budget situation, which we've been talking about here, okay, is not the best, okay, we have just kept to the four that we normally acquire on an annual basis. As to the indicators that you were referring to, Chairperson, there is an annex chart to the annual performance plan that talks to, that gives a full description of the indicators. And I think our RRP director can better explain how those indicators work.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, the question on the indicator annual submission, which is one at the end of the period and 0.25 or one quarter through each quarter, is explained in the following way. It is a cumulative indicator, meaning that although we have one annual submission that we table in May, the work takes place during the cycle of the research or during the year. So for us to track whether we are on track with meeting the annual target of one annual submission tabled in May, we have to develop indicators that we monitor every quarter so that we judge the progress that we're making. And what the indicator that we have here is that we do 25% every quarter. So first quarter we do 25%, which essentially is judged through our research committee approving research proposals. We call that 25% contribution to the annual submission. In the second quarter, we have first drafts of the proposal for annual submission, and we call that 25% of the work, which cumulatively means at the second quarter we're on 50%. In the third quarter we have our commission review where we are zeroing in on the recommendations that will come up, and that's another 25% towards attaining the one annual submission. So it will be the incremental 25% or 75% of the work. And then in this final quarter is when we come with the annual submission document in May, which is the remaining 25%. So you get 25% every quarter for the three quarters, and then the full submission in the fourth quarter when it becomes due, is the annual submission.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know. Those were the questions. If we missed anything, you can highlight that. Then I
think from my side, Chair, you have entertained all questions and comments. Very interesting, consistent projection of 25% throughout all the quarters. Very interesting. The issue of the reference books, only four. It's interesting to me because, you know, there is so much information that is flowing in, and I know you guys are doing a lot. I was going to come to acknowledge, of course, your role in the past, currently, and our expectation in as far as your role is concerned. I know for a fact that you guys are doing a lot of research. So I was trying to link this reference book to the amount of work that you are. And I thought maybe these are special reference books. But I think it has been cleared. Members, are there any follow-ups before I summarize on our discussions? Honorable Mteto, your hand is up. Don't be intimidated. You are protected.
Thank you, Chair. I think my question were misunderstood in one sense, that I never talked of any spazer shop on policies. The director was responding. I said simply, looking at all these challenges that the commission is having, how would you summarize your document in such a way that it's mainly directed to the committee? We understand the details of your strategic objection. But how would you summarize to us as a point of taking forward these challenges? That was my question. I'm not taking an exception on the say that the issue of we are not a spaza shop, we are dealing with this and this. No. We should have directed that question to the right person. That was not me. My point was just focusing on the strategic document. And lastly, I ask on the financially person to say, how are you reducing? You are telling us that without any funding, extra funding, but you are able to reduce the deficit. How are you doing that? It was answered by the chairperson that you're cutting the space, and I was getting the answer through the line. Those are my expected answers, not the other issues that you were addressing.
All right, do you want to have a last take on this one?
No.
Oh, are you okay?
No,
no, just on members.
Maybe I'm sure Tanya would be very happy to disassociate you from this puzzle.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you very much, members, and thank you very much for your responses. Honourable members, I think after this very useful engagement, it's very clear that there are key things that need to be done by either ourselves as committee members or the FFC in terms of ensuring that they continue to implement their strategic plan. Maybe before I give a summary of some of these key issues, allow me to acknowledge, maybe to demystify the cited analogy, the spaza shop analogy. You know, one must acknowledge on behalf of this committee that
the feedback that we have been getting from your team, obviously, as recommendations to some of our work, more especially budget processes, has been very helpful. But also your projections, I mean, so far I think as a committee, we are not relying, we don't have so-called many alternative official sources of information. It's either is SSA or Reserve Bank or yourself. So that has been very helpful. I mean, to compare, I mean, to your analysis and also to assist us as this committee in executing our mandate. So we think as a committee, and I'm definitely sure that I'm representing my committee appropriately here when I say your recommendations around the establishment on the call and all the efforts that have been undertaken so far by Parliament, even the oversight visit on the essence of the establishment of a parliamentary office as championed by the House Chair's office, has been very helpful. Because through analysis, we're able to compare what is happening in other countries and with what we want to happen here in our country, in as far as the budget office is concerned. And I think from where I am, it's going to be very interesting on how you contrast issues. When the budget office is finally established, that is definitely going to enrich our work as parliamentarians. So definitely in the future, we still see this institution playing a very, very critical role in as far as issues of budgets are concerned. And on key issues, I think on our side as a committee, the following image very clear some of the key issues that we need to look at going forward. I think there is a clear need on our side to look at the prospects of reviewing the FSC Act. Obviously, that will allow us to come out very clear around the conflicting role of the chairperson and also the chairperson as an accounting officer. So that simply says we will be clear on the role of the chairperson and, of course, the chief executive officer. But also, by reviewing the act, we will come out very clear on the funding model, which is felt that might be compromising the independence of the FSC. But also the funding model, I mean, it's as if FSC are more of beggars. I mean, if people have to carry on ITC infrastructure, which one can refer to as obsolete, really, and looking at the mandate of the FSC, it's very clear that FSC, to a certain extent, might have been compromised to be beggars. I hope it's not going to create another analogy. But I'm just saying, from where I am, I've got a feeling that they can't move because they're relying on the national treasury to fund this important item of their operations, you know. So that simply says the fund. And I think it's a lesson also to us members, because now we are also looking at the issue of the establishment of the tax ombuds office. And if you remember, one of our arguments has been around the funding model. Because this is the ombuds office that is going to help to hold tax, tax services accountable. And tax services, as we are all aware, of course, I mean, this is an extension of national treasury. So it says, look at also at this, some of this empirical evidence presented. Is this helping? I mean, for us to say some of these independent institutions must rely on national treasury, I mean, for funding of their operations. And the other issue that I think the committee will have to look at is the issue of vacancies. I must indicate that and confirm what has been said by the acting chair. This matter has been brought to the attention of the chairperson, and the chairperson insists with the matter. And mainly this reaction from the national treasurer that the acting chair was referring to is as a result of that particular intervention. And I think at an appropriate time, the chairperson will report to the committee on the progress on this matter. But what I'm trying to bring to your attention is to confirm that, yes, the matter was brought to the attention of the chairperson, and the chairperson insists to dismiss, working with the ministry as well as the president on this issue. So at an appropriate time, we will be informed of the progress. And I think lastly, something that emerged very clearly that we have to do, and our committee secretary has noted, we need to schedule for engagement on an administrative prices presentation. We need to schedule very urgently because I know other committees are also seized with this matter. And I think one other idea that we need to look at, Alan, is to check if are there no other committees that are scheduled for such. So you don't come to Cape Town for one reason, you know, on two different trips. So let's try to check if you are invited by NAG or by any other committee. Let us know so we can then have a joint sitting around this matter and continue to play our role of ensuring that we cut costs where it's necessary. Now, on your part as the FSC, I would encourage you to go back and ensure that there is effective implementation of your strategic plan. I look into issues of deficit management as an issue that has been coming out of your work. But also continue to champion, I know it's difficult, but continue to champion the issue of gender parity aspects. I mean, the equity things must be, I mean, very, very central in your approach. But also continue to champion best financial management and accountability practices, very key. So as we don't fight with the AG unnecessarily, you know. And I think from where I am with my little knowledge around issues of human capital management, I mean, if you have been acting as a chair from 2010, as cited in the report. And there have been these vacancies also from, I think it's 2008. Obviously, as much as you are trying to operate as if nothing is happening for the sake of success, the rather the matter that some of these things will affect your morale and obviously will affect the work ethic. So go back and make sure that as these issues are being entertained, the morale is kept high and the work ethics are of a high level. You know, it's very, very critical that you do that, or else the institution will collapse and you will have to revisit the analogy of the spaza shop. You know? So let's make sure that we don't get to that situation. In another language, one might say, Hotsakama Koro, Iski Motswana, my mother is a Motswana, Hotsakama Koro, Hasafalaka. In the Queen's language, they say, we part to meet. Go well, fly well, and fly economic. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Keep you have them on the page.
Yeah, I'm going to offer you copies of the file recording.